This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever the living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Very good. Okay. Thank you, Molly.
Thank you.
We'll just let them organise the sheets and everything and come down, have a nice comfortable seat. So, here we are. So as Rachel pointed out, I've been a fully ordained monk for almost 11 years now. So I think typically Ajahn Brahm sends out his monks when they're about... been a monk for about 5 years to come and do this group. It's kind of their way to his way of breaking them in as teachers, you see. And there's kind of two approaches to this. You know, some people like to prepare and have a nice structured talk when they come to give this talk, or others like to follow in the steps of the Thai forest tradition and just do it off the cuff. And I do remember way back, you know, maybe 2013, when I was just five rains retreats as a monk, and Rachel says, please prepare. But it's okay, now I've had a bit of experience now, so I do find that sometimes the best talks are the ones you just give off the cuff. It takes a bit of time to get into the teaching groove, but I've had 6 years of it now, so we'll see how we go. Yeah, so yeah, no, I've been up at Scott Road, the temple up in Scott Road, for just over a year. I got there after the rains last year, so October 25th last year, I went up there to join Ajahn Santuti to hang out at the Cambodian temple. They've got one Cambodian monk there who's been there for about 8 years. And yeah, so we've joined him. There's three of us up there. Actually, the three of us came down and gave a talk together just earlier this year. So yeah, and the Bodhinyana monks have, well, all the monks have their, in this tradition, have their ceremony for the new moon. So it's a very dark night tonight with the moon gone. So they've got a big ceremony down there Bodhinyana, so I stepped in tonight to help out. But we also run the Monday night meditation group there as well. So if you want to head down Brookton Highway on a Monday, there's the group there as well. So it's pretty small sort of group there compared to this. Actually pretty good for that part of the world. I was there's a lot, actually quite a few people here actually attend the Monday night group, and it's been working really well. The nice thing about Wat Dani Amram, the Cambodian temple, is it's has a very domestic feel, you know. So there's three monks there who know each other very well. We've got a one Anagarika, so someone who's training to be a monk. Possibly that's Rob. He might ordain sometime around February, I think. So we all know each other very, very well, and the only way that's going to work is if you are good friends. In a larger community, you can sort of disappear, and people can actually not get along, and it's all right. But so it's really nice out there. I got that sort of kind, friendly feeling. So when people come up for the meal, you know, it's kind of, Rob's out there making them coffees, and it really encompasses that feeling of metta that we talk about in the Metta Sutta here, that kind of, just getting along and being able to live together reasonably harmoniously, which is good. So so I come here tonight and say a few words about meditation. Ajahn Brahm, my teacher, is one of the very famous meditation teachers out there. I remember when I was a young man, and I was, even before I returned to Perth from where I was working in Melbourne, I came across him on the internet there. So heard a couple of Dharma talks, and even back then you could download the view on the web his instructions on meditation, and he goes into great depth on breath meditation. So he teaches some very, very deep states of meditation as well. And I think the important thing when you're starting out as a meditator is to have that sense of curiosity, to try different ways of meditation, to practice a little bit at home when you've got the time. Maybe come along here for the Tuesday nights or the Monday nights up at Wat Dhamma Yanaram, and just investigate to see how this mind works. And this is very much something you can spend the rest of your life doing, because the mind is a many and varied thing. Lots of things come up, and I know when you're starting out, you always you might have these doubts. Am I meditating correctly? Ajahn Brahm's first meditation teacher was well known for saying, "There's no such thing as a bad meditation." So you can't do it wrong. if you go into it with a bit of curiosity, with interest, to with a desire to learn a bit more about yourself, then you'll do fine. That's good. Over time there's plenty of opportunities to practice and try different things, and to I know a lot of people when they meditate with their new meditators, or they've you know, they're very experienced meditators, people who've been monks for 11 years, you know. So sometimes you sit down and you go, oh, you know, oh, am I doing this right? And you're like, yeah, you're doing it right. It's okay. Yeah, just take your time. And to, yeah, I was mentioning the other night at the Monday night group, yeah, there's a couple of things that matter when you sit down to meditate, and how quickly the mind becomes calm and peaceful. And a lot of it comes down to two things, which is the often the day that you've had, sometimes the week that you've had. So sort of how shaken up the mind is when you just sit down and start to meditate. That's going to be a factor, and also the amount of practice you've had over the years, you know, or over the weeks, or over the last half hour at the end of the day. You'll find that with practice the mind settles down a lot easier, and will actually can often recover from more and more sort of disturbances in your life. I mean, I know over east there's bushfires everywhere. As I was leaving the monastery today, there was a fire over at Araluen, so hope the monastery is there when I get back. But it's a still night, so hopefully they've got under control. It'd only been reported about 20 minutes ago, so you never know. Only the second time I've had to worry about my risk to my life. I came across a tiger snake as well this morning, but he was very mellow. There's a at the monastery we have the Cambodian temple, and then which is owned by the Cambodian Buddhist Society of Western Australia. And next door to that we've got 26 acres. I mean, that's 6 acres itself, but next door we've got 26 acres which belong to the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. So we've got a bit of a project going on there, the Stocker Road project. If you check it up on the BSWA website. We're renovating a block of stables into a house for monks, so that's a lot of fun. I got a lift down to the stables and let Rob the Anagarika do his work, and I decided to walk back by the river. So the river is actually a very nice little walk there, and I know a lot of our visitors like to go down there for a bit of a tour. The Canning River actually runs along the bottom of the property. So I decided to walk back that way this morning, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw a bit of movement. I was like, oh, yeah, that's a tiger snake. But I was able to say, it was all right. You know, I just went, oh, okay, well, it's not right in front of me. So I just kept walking, and it sort of checked me out, and it was all right. So, after a while you do develop this ability to let things go, and, you know, nah, it's all right. You know, it's just that part of the hills there is... There's lots of little critters. With a bit of practice, you do learn to calm the mind down, and that can be very, very useful sometimes. It's definitely useful when you come back from work and you've had a bad day, or you've had a stressful day, and you can find some time, hopefully, to sit down for... for new meditators, you know, 5 or 10 minutes is good, or you can always experiment with different lengths, just develop that peaceful, calm mind, and it's certainly a enjoyable thing to live with. Okay, so essentially the way we calm down the mind in meditation is a result of letting go of the five senses. So when we sit down in meditation, we can typically close our eyes. After a while there's nothing to see. We find hopefully a nice quiet place to practice. So if you have a separate room or something in the house to practice in, that's always a good idea. Here we've got this lovely little room that we've managed to keep for 35 years now, whatever.
Oh no, only about 20.
20, only 20. 20. I wouldn't know. No, Bodhnyana's been around.
No, 35. We were at Gosnell's Library at first.
Gosnell's Library,
yeah,
right.
Okay.
Later. Okay. We've had this room ever since I've been coming here, so ever since I've been a monk, and ever since I was an Anagarika driving the monks here. Just to have a nice quiet room to practice in. If you happen to be in a very, very noisy neighbourhood, or you have loud kids, or something like that. There are the options of heading down to the hardware store and grabbing a good pair of earmuffs is one way to do it, or there's even, if you've got the cash, you can splurge out on some, was it noise-cancelling earphones? I haven't tried that, but I think Ajahn Brahm uses it on the, yeah, they're good, yeah. Ajahn Brahm uses it on the plane, because he travels quite a bit, so there's always babies crying, and it's never particularly quiet on an aeroplane anyway, even with the engines going, but yeah, noise cancelling earphones, they can work too. So the eyes, the sight, the sound are enough that you can sort of just let them go, and you know, we don't sort of sit here and bake cookies or anything, which is good. So there's no you don't have to worry too much about the smells, the tastes. We're not chowing down anything, and yeah, then you're left with the body. So it's Ajahn Brahm practices, or Ajahn Brahm teaches, you know. One of the meditation objects is just to watch the breath, and that's a simple way of just watching a very small, simple part of the body, and to allow the rest to sort of fade away. And so, yeah, and after a while, you know, the after a bit of practice, you know, yeah, these the senses sort of fade away, and you get a chance to experience the mind and just the way it works, and to just to develop a little bit of insight into the way of meditation, how we become peaceful and calm, and sometimes joyful in our practice. So, I was having a chat to Rob on, to Bob on the way here. Bob Steele was giving me a lift this morning, this evening, and suggested maybe today, you know, for to start with, do a little bit of body awareness, and then maybe we can do some guided meditation on the breath, and maybe we'll go through that tonight. You can, of course, go dig into Ajahn Brahm's basic method of meditation. There should be a few copies lying around here. Is that right? Are there? No? Otherwise, there's...
We've got the book at the back.
The booklets, yeah. Yeah, so they're there for free distribution. And, yeah, like I say, this is something to be cultivated over a long time, so not always... see how you go. And, yeah, so... What else is there? What else is there? So, yeah, as I was saying at the beginning, the most important thing here is just to develop a bit of curiosity towards the practice of meditation, and if you're curious, you'll take an interest in things, and if you take an interest in things, you'll tend to practice them and see how you go. It's a bit like it's a bit like learning a musical instrument, really. So when you pick it up the first time, it's you probably try and figure out which end is which, and especially if you're a violinist, you know, make some god awful sounds, or alternatively, you know, the teacher just gives you a recorder, which is pretty simple. So yes, please just take an interest, and we'll see how we go tonight. And if you enjoy yourself, you can always come back here each week. We have different teachers each week, so they're on there's a large number of monks over at Bodhinyana, so they come up here, and they're the ones usually giving this talk. There's just me and Santuti up at the Wat Damayana Run, but we sort of get into the schedule sometimes, and so there's always something new to learn here, I think. Definitely. Cool. So, if anyone has any questions before we start, okay, that's all right. I sort of got bouncy balls here, so if you haven't found a good, comfortable posture yet, there's always the bouncy balls. don't know. But the sofa's a good choice. but not for the sleepy. Okay, so, okay, cool. Cool. So, yeah, please get comfortable and we'll just let Bob's just checking out the corridor. I don't know what's going on there. Anyway. Yeah, plenty of spare chairs. Just grab a seat. Okay. So let's see, I've got a little microphone here. We've got the sound system at the back. I hope you can all hear me fairly well. No problem. Good. Yeah, cool. Okay, one more. Cool. And another one. Yeah, no problem. Actually, there's a full minute till I'm scheduled to start the meditation. So, so yeah, please come in, find a seat. Yeah, great. Any of those latecomers, I was just giving a few short talk about meditation, but yep, I'm sure you'll we'll just carry on, no problems. Okay, so right, okay, so that's good. I'll just go by Bob's recording device for the time. Oh, I can just about make out the clock, but don't worry, I won't run over time. Speaking of being comfortable, please take a bit of time just to relax your body, and just look out for any obvious issues with the body, whether there's something that needs to be shuffled, something that needs to be scratched. Make sure your clothing isn't too tight. And we can just settle down now and relax. And as I said, we can just spend a few minutes just attending to the body. We close our eyes. And there's nothing to see. It's a nice quiet room. Good comfy chairs. Just start by giving a bit of attention to your feet. Make sure they're just positioned comfortably. And just feel the sensations of the floor on your feet. Always remember to have some kindness to your body. Whatever aches and pains there may be, just give them a bit of time to relax. And your lower legs, are they in the right position for you? For you to sit here for a while comfortably, nothing biting into them. everything's nice and relaxed. Your upper legs, your thighs. If you've been on your toes today, there might be a little bit of stiffness there in your upper legs. And make sure to just have that kindness. Allow that part of your body to relax. Enjoy that wonderful sensation of your bottom on the chair. Oh, it's time to chill, so you can just feel gravity pushing you down to your chair. And your hands, how are they? Are they comfortable now? They're more comfortable on your knees, in your lap. Just make sure the body's nice and comfortable. Let the arms drip down, just gently. And if the back is nice and comfortable curved, that's fine too. You don't have to be rocket meditators. All of those parts of your spine aligned. No, you can slouch, it's okay. And relax your shoulders. Let your chin drop just where it's comfortable. A lot of the tension of the day is stored in that part of the body. So just relax. muscles of the face, around the eyes. There you go, nice, comfortable body to start the meditation with a nice, calm body. It's all right, you can cough, you can sneeze, it's okay. It's all, you don't have to run it. Yeah, so now's the time just to see what's going on in this mind in the present moment. What's got your attention in this inner world, you know? Over time, we just let go all those worries we carry with us, all our responsibilities, whatever's been going on through the day, we can just let that drop. Just recognize that the present moment is actually a very pleasant place to be. You're in a nice, safe place. You just let go for a while. Just enjoy this time. Time to rest the body and to rest the mind. As you rest here in the present moment, you can slowly watch your mind slow down. You can see that the thinking mind just gradually settles down. Maybe this process takes a long time. Maybe it's easy for you. That's not important. We just give the mind time. Ask nothing of it. Just be content to relax here in the present moment. sky with a bit of calm in the mind. Just ask yourself, what's my breath doing now? Sometimes the breath comes into awareness by itself. You can give it some attention, and if it wants to be watched, that's great. And just watch it go in, go out. And with kindness, just breathe out the tension of the day. the breath isn't ready to be watched, which is often the case, just let it go for now. Just be content to stay here in the present moment. And as we come close to the end of the meditation, just remind yourself that this is good enough. However it's gone, ease your heart. It's all good meditation. Just having that sense of contentment to sit here for about 30 minutes doing basically nothing at all. We'll now ring the bell 3 times. At the end of the third chime, please come out of your meditation. Okay, you can wiggle your toes, stretch anything that needs stretching. Close the light. That's okay, it's alright. Ah, we have. Ah, okay. Oh, you got the. The option there of it's okay, that's alright, no worries. If you see blinding flashes in your meditation, it's not always a bad thing, don't worry. And if you have to cough or sneeze, that's kind of part of group meditation, so don't worry too much. So does anyone have any questions about the meditation? So, I think we're done. Yeah, good. Someone's got a question. Oh, good, it's Bob. What you got?
For the beginners, perhaps the hindrances?
Ah, right, okay. Yeah, so... Okay, well, that's a big question. The instructions are actually pretty clear when it comes to meditation, and even if you delve deep into the suttas, the Buddha gave many, many explicit instructions on what to do, and yet we still find it hard to meditate. And that's okay. That's why we have this sense of curiosity. We start looking into it and see, what makes it easy, what makes it more difficult. And the Buddha was fond of lists. The Buddha really the Buddha had a lot of anyway. One of his lists was of the five hindrances, as Bob just mentioned. So. Often when we teach meditation, especially with Ajahn Brahm, it's one of the things we look at. These typically five things that can make that we come across that make it difficult to sort of be settled, to be relaxed, to become mindful, to become aware of what's going on in the present moment, to allow the thoughts to settle down and to watch the breath and follow that path. So probably the biggest hindrance, grumpiness. That's the thing I think a lot of people come up with. I mean, for me anyway, yeah. Sometimes you sit down in meditation and someone's irritated you, or you've been watching the news. Don't watch the news. All these sorts of things. When we sit down to meditate, you know, a lot of this ill will is something we need to let go before we can settle down a bit further. So it's always good to sit there with what Ajahn Brahm calls kindfulness, which is like this combination of being in the present moment and also just being kind to yourself, because our tendency is to be often to be hard on ourselves, or to find fault with the world. And that was actually the second hindrance that the Buddha talked about, but you know, it's probably one of the more common ones. And also doubt is like the fifth hindrance, and I find that it's probably most apparent in the when we start thinking, am I doing this right? And this is something you can have even when you're a very experienced meditator, right? So that's why I always start the meditation by saying that, you know, you are doing this right. It's okay. The fact that you've made the effort to come here to sit on the chair and just close your eyes for 30 minutes, that's actually all you really need to do. There's this fear that a lot of people have that, I've been spending all this time meditating and maybe I've been doing it all wrong, you know. So, it does happen. And I even know a monk, he's a very good monk, he's actually turned up again at Bodhnyana recently. His name's Abhay Ratna. So he's a very nice man. He's an older gentleman, and we've, as I said, I was in Sri Lanka back in 2014 for 4 months, and he happened to turn up at the same monastery at the same time, which was pretty cool. And he said that he'd been in Burma and he'd been meditating at this temple, and just was there for a retreat as a monk and did a lot of meditation and. He was having a good time, and then afterwards he finished the retreat and he went off travelling. And then he met another monk, and the monk said to him, oh, where have you been? And he says, oh, I've been to this monastery. Oh, you know, oh, what do they practice there? He says, oh, well, they practice this way. And the other monk said, oh, no, that's all wrong. You've got to come to this temple and he'll show you the way to... this is the way you have to meditate. You've been doing it all wrong. So I think that second monk was probably, maybe a little bit too rigid in his views. I think there's many, many different ways of meditating. And again, if you have that sense of curiosity, you'll probably try different kinds of meditation and see what works for you. But at the end of the day, I mean, I've never once in the many years that I've known my teacher to say to someone, no, you're doing it all wrong. He never says that. I mean, maybe sometimes in our behaviour he'll say, oh, you shouldn't be doing that, which is just his job as a senior monk to keep his monks in line, you know, if you're behaving, you know, that's important. But when it comes to meditation, you know, whenever he gives an interview or a meditation interview, as he often does, you know, you sit down with your teacher and he'll talk about your meditation, you know, he says, it's very good, very good, very good. Whatever you say, you know, it doesn't matter what's been happening in the meditation. Very good, very good. So he's a very encouraging teacher. So I mean that's like, so what we've got here, we've got like the second hindrance so far we've done, which is like anger, which is like could be anything from sort of grumpiness to there's just so much to get upset about when you watch the news, so don't do that. I don't watch the news. I get small traces of it here and there, and I just shake my head. I think the term is facepalm. When you sit down in meditation, you can just forget about all that. And Ajahn Brahm uses the very skillful technique of just saying, "This is good enough. This is good enough." You know, whatever's going on in the world, you know, I can make peace with that. I can be kind. I can be gentle, and there's no need for me to suffer because of, you know, the deeds of other people, basically. So we cultivate this feeling of metta, this loving kindness. I was talking before. We read out in the Metta Sutta. You know, we talk about these different qualities that a kind person would have. And just living with a couple of close friends is really nice, actually. My friend Santuti, who I've known for many years, since I was a layperson, probably as long as I've known Rachel, and many of you. And, he's a really, really lovely monk to live with. We constantly get on each other's nerves, but it's okay, we just let it go. It's the nature of being in such a small community. And, my new friend Sukakama, who's a Cambodian monk there, it's a pretty informal situation there, so, you know, we just hang out, have a cup of tea now and again, and or usually in the evenings have a cup of tea, do a lot of work. We've got projects all over the place now with two properties and a temple to look after, plus teaching duties and stuff. So, we might be a bit busy sometimes, but if you have that sort of familial setting, you know, that comfort with each other, that can be a really... skillful thing to cultivate. There was two that are very easy to understand, which is the pair of sloth and torpor, you know. Well, that's what they call it in the sutras, basically being tired. Sometimes it's a physical thing, you know. You've been working very hard physically, or other times we get very sleepy in the meditation because, we've actually been so active, especially in our minds, that when we first sit down to meditate, that sometimes we're not off. We don't have that sort of sharp mind that's able to watch the breath. So at those times, I say it's a really good idea just to sit there and rest. You know, you've got your 5 or 10 minutes in the evening, or first thing in the morning to meditate, or maybe got a lunch break or something, go down to the park and to just take that time to rest. You know, when you sit there at the beginning of the meditation, you can usually see, you know, what needs a bit of work, and sometimes you just need to sit there and do nothing at all, just to give yourself a bit of time to do nothing at all. And the other side of that, the flip side of sloth and torpor is well, pretty much thinking, right? So every new meditator wants to, or every experienced meditator wants to know, what do I do about my thinking? You know, this restlessness in the mind. And yeah, there's no quick fix for that either. You know, you've just got to take the time, and it's almost like this slope in the mind. You know, you start at a certain point when you sit down to meditate, and you might be nice and calm, or you might be very agitated, and you just have to give yourself some time. Maybe by the end of the meditation, you're not at this, really, really calm, but maybe just better than you were when you started. And that's important, you know, to not have too many expectations about what's going to happen or how things will work in the meditation. Just taking that time to let it do what it wants to do. It's almost like a clock winding down. If it's been wound up too tight, it does take a while for it to slowly calm down, and you'll feel that through the body as well. Sometimes when you have a lot of stress in your life, it often manifests in the body as well. So maybe it's in the shoulders or in around the eyes or somewhere else in the body, and to let that stress unwind is just often just a matter of locating it in the body to see where it is, and just to have that kindness, just to take the time, the 5, the 10 minutes, the 20 minutes, the hour, whatever you want to do, and understand that there's this process. You start with the mind that is the way it is, and to leave it be, calms down, and you feel better. Judy, you've got some sloth and torpor.
Yeah. Well,
there you go. So you got insight already. You already know you've got some sloth and torpor. So we just have these. So I've spoken about 4 of the 5 hindrances. You got the ill will, the restlessness, the tiredness, the doubt, or wondering what's supposed to happen or hasn't happened or should happen, these sorts of things. And I've left out the first one, which is it's difficult to describe. It's spoken of in the suttas as sensual desire. So this wanting, this sense of wanting things. I don't know. I haven't been a layperson for a long time, so I don't know what lay people want. I don't know what lay people want in the meditation, but I guess I guess we want something else. So to overcome that hindrance of wanting things, we develop its opposite, the contentment in the mind, and that's possibly one of the most important qualities to develop, is that sense of contentment that this is good enough, I'm good enough. Yeah, I'm good enough to sit here for however long, and just to go with meditation, however easy it is, whatever's going on. So, yeah, so those are the 5 hindrances. These are spoken of again and again in the suttas, and some things that we come up against a lot, and often we just need to remember to cultivate their opposite. So, you know, if we want something really badly, or we cultivate contentment. If we're grumpy or angry or whatever, we cultivate metta, loving kindness, friendliness, that kind of just being kind to yourself and being kind to the people around you. If we're tired, we rest. You got a nice comfortable chair here, so you can relax, you can just rest. And often in these classes, I mean, I didn't hear any snoring today, but often someone will fall asleep. That's when you know you've really given a really good guided meditation, if someone's relaxed enough to fall asleep. And to with the restless mind, just to leave it be, just let it take its time to wind down, and to remember that there is there's no such thing as a bad meditation, that this is good enough, that whatever's going on, yes, you're doing it right. You're here. So yeah, that's a brief rundown on the five hindrances and their antidotes. So, does anyone have any questions? That was a long answer to a short question. But does anyone have any questions, especially about your experience in meditation today? It's often difficult to teach breath meditation because it is one of the more subtle meditation objects. So I can give you a brief introduction in half an hour, but it's something that I've learned over the years. The best thing to do with the breath is just to wait for it to come and make itself watched. You know, just to, at a certain point, the mind is calm enough to settle down with a given meditation object. We teach a number of different techniques here. I mean, body sweeping is often a very easy one to use, very easy one to teach. Just, yeah, working through the body and just relaxing at peace by peace, and having metta towards the body as well. So, yeah, these are various things we can practice. We have a number of guided meditations on the BSWA website, and I think we've got a Podbean podcast app or something, a website. Oh, it's a thing. Podbean. It's a Podbean thing. Yep. Yes. So there's all sorts of different meditations that have been given over the years and recorded. They're always good things to go back to and have a listen to, and and highly recommend that. Yeah, Rachel?
Can you say, if you don't mind, something about meditation and mental health?
Meditation and mental health. Sure. Fair enough, yes. Yeah. Where should I begin? Well, at the end of the day, I think meditation, mental health are sort of parallel processes. So, obviously, if you need to, if you have something serious, you need to see a doctor or something like that, or take medication, whatever you need to do. That's good. But what meditation does is also give you another way of developing resilience, I think, is probably the best word. It's a popular word these days. But it's meditation is something that you typically cultivate over a very long time. So, at least a week. I've been doing it for, goodness knows, too many years now. And there's plenty to learn over time. But I think I said it at the beginning, is that, yeah, the two things that make it easy to bring make the mind calm is, if you've had an easy day, an easy life, no, I don't think anyone can claim to have an easy life, but, the more that things have stirred you up, and sometimes these things are very serious, you know, they're bigger problems than, you know, whatever's going on the news, trouble in your life or whatever, and our practice of meditation is part of our tool chest when we deal with these difficult parts of life. You'll hear us talk endlessly about letting go, but at its heart, it's a very simple thing. It's whatever's going on in your life, whether it's good, whether it's difficult, meditation helps you to let go, basically. It helps you to sort of put things in perspective, to have patience. And these are all qualities that help us when we have difficulties with mental health, be it anxiety or depression or even schizophrenia or bipolar, any of these things. The meditation actually gives you a chance to just get a bit of perspective on what's going on in the mind. I think that's the most important part, to give a bit of insight, you know, to what sort of things in life you can, well, the things you can change and the many things you can't change, and just to let them be, to be content. It's like, yeah, you know, I've got some suffering in my life, we all do, and don't take it personally. That kind of sums up the Buddha's teaching. Yeah, there is suffering, and don't take it personally. Everyone has their troubles. I don't think meditation is always a complete fix for various kinds of mental disorders, if you want to call them that. But I think in most cases, it's something that helps. Obviously, there are situations where someone is having a very difficult time, and maybe meditation is not the right thing at that time, and then I can accept that. But in most cases, I think it's very, very effective. I certainly don't have a lot of depression in my life. I know. I do have difficulties with anxiety, you know, just things. Yeah, just to sometimes, you know, get really, really just worried about things that aren't really that important, you know. But or if they are important, there's nothing you can do anyway. So that's that might be something that you sit down with at the beginning of the meditation, and at the end of the meditation, it's like, well, it's okay. I've definitely had that. Very, very often you'll sit down and maybe you might sit there for quite a long time and think that, oh, you know, my mind's in this completely crazy state. Like, I just can't let this thing go. Oh, no, this is so terrible. And then the meditation bell rings, you know, on your app or whatever you're using. That's not a alarm clock. Something gentle, and then it's like you get up from your seat. It's like, oh, hang on, I'm actually not that worried anymore. it's a common thing that happens with me. You know, you sit down and maybe the whole meditation seems out of control, and then when you sit up, you actually when you finish meditation, you actually feel a lot better for whatever reason. And it's a very intuitive thing. I don't think there's you can't make these things happen. It's just the process of meditation. Yeah, but so certainly something you can try if you do have issues with mental health. It's a good thing to practice. If you don't have problems with mental health, then good. It's still a good thing to practice. That's right. So
thank you.
No worries. Cheers. Cool. So, what's up? Any other thoughts? Anything?
We spoke last week.
Oh yeah.
Kind of like that. If you was a Buddhist and you was a vegetarian,
right?
What happens if your food is presented as not vegetarian?
Oh,
you can't refuse it. Because I don't want that.
Yeah, you can.
You can.
Some people get upset.
Yeah, right.
Well, like for me, I'm on the advice of my doctor, I'm really trying hard to keep away from desserts, right?
Okay.
So meat's one Tempting thing. Off. Meat's like usually when in our tradition we're kind of a blend of traditions, but a lot of it comes from the Thai forest tradition. The Thais aren't vegetarian. The Thai monasteries usually aren't vegetarian, although some are. But the thing with like monasteries like Bodhnyana down in Serpentine or where I'm at Dhammayanaram, there's usually all kinds of food. There's and especially at Dhammayanaram, is because I'm now a senior monk, all the lay people want to know what do you want to eat? What do you want to eat? So you know, if you want to change your diet, it's not that hard. But sweets are a problem because they like to especially take their sweets and put it right in front of you, so you have to eat it. But I have been turning it away lately, and yeah. But after a while, people go, "Oh, okay. Well, but I'll cook healthy food for you, Norris." Or yeah, we haven't got any vegetarians at the monastery at the moment. But let me think. Trying to think, who was with us recently? Oh, yeah, we had a Indian fellow stay with us, Larry. So he's interested in ordaining. He's not quite sure, but came to stay with us for a few days, and there's always enough food for him. Yeah, we're always good. Yeah. Mm. So that's us in our very fortunate place to be. I think at Bodhnyana, there's so much food that you can choose from anything, really. I know Upasama, who's quite a character. He's a raw vegan, yeah. So, and even he can survive on the food at Bodhnyana. So there you go. I think for him, a real treat for him is olives. So,
oh, I love them. We'll turn up with olives.
Oh, of course, always good.
There's
always
some.
But I mean, even myself as a meat eater, I'm starting to. I mean, I do understand. Yeah, there's. There are many, many reasons to object to meat, and especially these days, environmental ones as well. You know, the shockingly huge amount of land we dedicate to raising animals, and then another enormous amount of land they use for growing the food to give to the animals. So I do understand if people have the yeah, but anyway, I mean. At the end of the day, yeah, we're happy to eat whatever's brought to the monastery, really, and we do eat very well, I think. Yeah, good old Bob.
Yeah, I haven't forgotten you.
How are you?
Beautiful.
I've got a 3-year-old niece now.